T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Briefing for Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and today, well, today we have an awesome show heading your way. And if you don't believe me, all right, fine. Well, check this out. Coming up today, we will be joined live in studio by the new National Commander of the American Legion, Denise Rohan. Denise is an Army vet and longtime Legion member who was elected at the 99th Annual Legion Convention back in August. Now, it took 99 conventions to elect a woman to lead that 2 million member organization, but it's now happened, and she will be right here in this studio in just a little bit. In fact, right now she's outside of the studio, but we'll have her on here in just a little while. And then later, the CEO of America Bourbon, Derek Sisson, will join us to talk about his entry into the world of spirits, how he came up with that awesome name for his brand, and the partnership he has with the good folks over at Grunt Style. All of that and more on today's show, and it all starts now as we welcome the man, the myth, the legend, Jake the Texas Beefcake Hughes into the studio.
The man, the myth, the legend, or D, none of the above.
Yeah, you could be one of the above, at least. You're a man.
Yeah, or E, all of the above.
Yeah, you could be a myth, could be a legend, you could be a lot of things. How was your evening? And also, as a check-in, we're going to do this not every day, but some days. We're halfway through the week. It's Wednesday, hump day, as some people call it.
Hump day?
How is the anti-smoking, non-smoking Jake No Smokey thing going?
Jake No Smokey is going well. Smokey the Bear is not at my house. No, yeah. That was a horrible joke. I apologize.
Was that a joke?
Yeah, it was supposed to be.
I missed out on that.
So yeah. Don't worry about it.
You're still doing well? You haven't had any this week?
Nope. That's 2.5 weeks now.
That is not bad at all. I actually, so as we've been talking about, I'm in my own way, less publicly, because I'm not the attention seeker that you are, of course, as we all know. I am working on also cutting smoking out of my diet, as it were. And what I've found is that the time where I do it is when I drive to and from work. I live like 45 minutes away, depending on traffic. It can be as short as 25 minutes. It can be as long as 45 minutes. And when I'm in the car, I find that I smoke. I have cigarettes. I'll get cigarettes. Sometimes I can stop myself from getting them. I think this morning I found the way around it, Jake.
And how's that?
I rode my motorcycle in.
Aha.
Yeah, I got it out of the shop this weekend. You know, they were fantastic over there. Got it done for less money than I thought it was going to be. It was great. So I got it out this weekend and rode it a little bit on Saturday. And then this week I wanted to, on Monday, open up the garage door and was like, nope. I have cold weather gear, but it's chilly and there's no reason. It's a Monday. Meh. I'll do the car. While I was in the car, smoked cigarettes. Tuesday, kind of the same thing. A little bit warmer, but not much. Opened up the garage, got in the car as I drove to and from work, smoked a couple cigarettes. Today, no smoking cigarettes because I opened it up. It was still a little chilly, but I said, you know what? I'm doing it. I'm getting on the bike. I don't want it to sit here and feel like I've left the bike behind, like I've betrayed it, and I'm hanging out more with my friend Toyota Camry. No, Harley Davidson. I enjoy you as well. I should come up with a name for my bike. I don't know what it'll be. We'll work on that. But, you know, it's one of those things where I just realized when I got here, like, you know, I didn't have any cigarettes. Now, I couldn't stop and get my normal breakfast from my favorite breakfast spot because, well, that just would have been a mess. A cup of coffee in my hand as I rode down the road, it wouldn't have been safe.
Not really. You can buy cup holders, but...
But then you can't drink it as you're driving. I wear, when I'm riding and to get down here, I have to get on the interstate and the highways and everything. I wear a full face helmet, a modular full face helmet where you can flip off the face and everything. But yeah, I'm not going to be able to drink the coffee unless, and I thought about this morning because, my Bluetooth for my helmet wasn't working, which has speakers. So I wasn't listening to the radio or anything as I rode. And I was thinking maybe I could get a Camelback and fill it up with coffee. Do they make them for like hot beverages?
I think they can contain hot beverages. I think they can.
Well, I think we may have something
that's,
to research.
See, if that's what you're doing, then you need to stop worrying about cigarettes, start worrying about coffee. Because that's like an addiction thing. That's like when people sneak, you know, like alcoholic beverages into...
No, it's not.
It's the same thing. You're saying you can't get by without your coffee.
No, I got by without it. I just like, I got here and the coffee that they have here is like, it's okay. It's not great. It's okay. It's coffee. Put a little sugar in it. Put a little, you know, sweetener flavoring in it and all that stuff. And it works. It gets the job done. I'm saying I enjoy my coffee. And being from New England as I am, there's a specific brand that we are big fans of. The kind of donuts that you dunk, if you know what I'm talking about. They don't sponsor this show, so I can
talk about
it. We're
not going to name them.
But you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, if I could actually have a coffee as I rode, that would be just perfect.
You can get one of them really long swizzle straws.
And you can, yeah, I suppose I could do that, like a crazy straw that just goes all the way up. And people would see me and wonder, what the heck is that person doing? You know, I take offense at you comparing my desire to have a cup of coffee every morning to an addiction. Although when you talk about some other people, like people I happen to be married to, she drinks... I'm twice her size, literally. You've met her. I weigh twice as much as she does. She drinks 10, 15 times as much coffee as I do.
Oh, wow.
Every day. She makes a full pot. We have like a 12-cup pot of coffee that we make at home, the coffee machine. She'll drink the entire thing. She'll sometimes go to Starbucks later in the day after that. Now, she has a cutoff time. If she has coffee after this time, she can't go to sleep. So, yeah, there are some people who drink too much coffee.
Yeah, I had a buddy of mine back in one of my units when I was in the Army that he was so addicted to coffee, he would drink it all day, and it actually helped him get to sleep at night. He couldn't go to sleep if he didn't have a cup of coffee.
Wow, that's kind of counterintuitive, but hey, some things are. You know what else is counterintuitive, Jake?
What's that, Eric?
United States Army infantry officers and West Point graduates who espouse communism while in uniform.
That's just silly.
You can espouse communism all you want. I mean, you know, it's like me talking about the Hartford Whalers winning a Stanley Cup. My team doesn't exist anymore. Communism is a failed form of failed economic form, failed governmental form, however you want to look at it. But there are some people out there who think communism is the answer. And one of them is this young second lieutenant, 10th Mountain Division. 2nd Combat Brigade, specifically, Spencer Rapone, who is a graduate of West Point, as we reported first at ConnectingVets.com. He was also removed for standards, RFS, from the 1st Ranger Battalion of the 75th Ranger Regiment. We broke that news. In fact, you know, when we called up to check on it, the organizations we called with seemed kind of shocked to be hearing from us. Like, wait, what? What happened? They didn't know exactly what was going on there, but they soon found out. So, you know, the young second lieutenant is making a name for himself in a way that you typically don't want to as a young officer. And I don't know if you saw this, but our story, I mean, I think the second story on the Ranger Battalion removal is, I think, our second most popular story we've ever had at ConnectingBets.com. A lot of people have seen it. A lot of people have comments on it. And a lot of those comments are about what they think is going to happen to this guy, what he's going to face. So you've seen, I'm sure, some of the response to that. What have you seen people saying that Spencer Rapone might have to deal with?
Oh, I've seen them, but everything from getting kicked out to being hung.
Yeah, that one in particular, execution for treason. And I started looking at the UCMJ and saying, well, maybe, because there were some Reddit posts that he made in particular where he talked about creating some sort of guerrilla warfare manual. And I thought, well, if he's talking about creating a warfare manual for this supposed upcoming communist revolution that he believes is going to take place, wouldn't that be providing information to help our enemy? And couldn't that be construed as treason? You know who would have that answer better than you or I, Jake?
Who's that?
Sea lawyer Eric and barracks lawyer Jake, like that. You don't want to listen to the sea lawyers in the Navy. You listen to the sea lawyer, good luck. You're probably going to the brig for a while. So the people who do know what they're talking about, the JAGS, the Judge Advocate General Corps. We reached out and heard back from quite a few JAGS, and we chose a few of them who almost at random, just based on their previous positions, their areas of expertise. We had a lot of people who were willing to comment on it. And I wrote a story featuring their commentary on this yesterday. We had one of them on the show yesterday morning, of course, you'll remember, Butch Bracknell, former Marine Corps officer. So we wrote this story, and I asked them four questions. Could Rapone face treason or espionage charges under Article 106A? The answer, no. basically they're all saying, no, it doesn't amount to treason. Now, one of them did say, and this actually isn't in the story, it was excluded from the story because it was kind of extraneous, that Reddit post about making a guerrilla combat manual, if they could prove that he actually went through with it and distributed it, then that could possibly, then you might have something, they said. But otherwise, no, he's nothing that he's done yet. Some of them saying it's a stretch, some saying it's nothing but attention seeking, all of them saying it's not treason.
Yeah, that's, if I may interject real quick, that's my big question about the whole thing. He has to know that there will be negative consequences to what he's doing. He has to, if he went through West Point, he knows the UCMJ.
Yep.
So he knew there would be bad things to come from what he's doing, and yet he's doing it anyway. So either is he trying to be a martyr, or is he just dumb?
Yeah, and you wonder. I mean, you're doing something like this, and what he put, again, you can go to social media, and this is the interesting thing about this day and age. Things have changed. He put on Reddit where he was, what his job was. I mean, the screen name, the username on Reddit, it's SRAP1. So you could say, well, Spencer Rapone, SRAP. Okay, there's a little tie, but how do we know this is him? Well, because he put in a post, I'm an infantry officer at 10th Mountain Division, 2nd Combat Brigade. He put his identifying information, and people responded to him a couple months ago when he made that post, like, hey, comrade, you might want to be careful in putting your personal info out there. And his response to that was, I know, but I believe that we should no longer be hiding, and we should be coming out of the shadows. All right, well, have fun out of the shadows now, bud, because things ain't looking so good.
Yeah,
for
that's
him.
My other theory. Maybe he's just trying to get out of the military.
Well, there's easier ways to do it.
Well, because his father, in an interview, said that before, when he was an enlisted guy, before he went to Iraq or Afghanistan, whichever he went to, he was a normal patriotic kid, and he was fine. And then he came back, and either something happened, or he decided this wasn't the career for him anymore.
Well, when you look at his Reddit posts in particular, you go back 2+ years, and it's all about the WWE and like soccer, sports, essentially, sports and entertainment. And then about 2.5 years ago, which is when he would have been at West Point, it took a hard left turn. And I use left, of course, specifically because he's espousing a hard left ideology. So it took a hard left turn, and it all of a sudden just became nothing but communism, with like an occasional WWE post sprinkled in there for, I guess, to lighten things up a bit. I wonder if there's a communist WWE group on Reddit.
There's
probably,
probably
there's just about a group for just about everything on there. So I asked them again, if treason isn't on the table, what is? There's a few things: conduct unbecoming an officer, Article 92, which is like a uniform violation thing. There's also a DOD regulation, as far as him holding his socialist organization ID card next to his uniform. That's a problem. Article 88, because of his statements against Secretary Mattis and others, including Vice President Pence. He put it on a platform. It's court-martial level offense. Uniform violations, social media policy violations. There's a lot of things. But then the question that I asked, the last one, will he face charges or be dealt with quietly? And they're kind of split on that. You'll need to go check out the article to find out exactly what they say. But one of them saying, I would absolutely seek charges. Some of them saying, no, quiet, Article 15. And we talked to a variety. We talked to people who were prosecutors, essentially defenders, one who was a military judge who had that whole perspective to bring into it, and what they think is going to happen with him. They all seem to be in agreement that he's going to be out of the United States Army.
Yeah,
none of them say he's going to stay in.
You would think so. And again, this is Barrick's lawyer Jake talking, but I would deal with him quietly because I can't help the thought that part of this is attention seeking. So yeah. I wouldn't want to give him the big trial where he can become some big name like that Lieutenant Watata guy from back in when we kicked off Iraq War. He's the officer that famously refused to deploy because he didn't believe in the war and whatnot. So it's like they don't want to create another martyr like that. So they're probably going to just quietly sort of file him out.
Yeah. Well, one of them did say, and you can find the details on this in that story, which is on connectingvets.com. It's among the headlines there. They say that one of them, at least, saying they expect him to get a RILO. So what that is that he will have charges filed against him under the UCMJ and be given the opportunity to resign his commission in lieu of court martial. That's what RILO, resign in lieu of. There's that. And then there's also one in particular who has an idea of what he would do if he were prosecuting the case. And it would not only remove Second Lieutenant Rapone from the Army, it would also remove quite a few dollars from his wallet there. So
that's an option, too.
It certainly could be. And then, of course, we have the Las Vegas massacre, which you knew it wasn't going to take long before it turned into a political event, and it was going to turn into the argument on gun control, which I saw you actually, Jake and I, of course, work together. And unlike a lot of people I've worked with in the past, I've sent you the Facebook friend request, and I saw you post yesterday that you've changed your mind a little bit on gun control. So tell me about that.
Well, I would first like to say I'm a staunch supporter of the Second Amendment. I believe in every American's right to own a weapon, a firearm, to be able to defend themselves and their families. Now, that being said, I believe that right now you can get what's called a Class 3 license, which means you jump through a lot of hoops and you can own an automatic weapon in certain states. And I believe that that should be rescinded. I don't think a automatic weapon should be available to the public, because you don't need to fire 400 rounds a minute to protect your family or go hunting.
No.
And then also, I believe, bump stocks, which is now what we what I've heard several news organizations
say. He had them. We don't know if he used them. He had them.
Yes. Well, to me, it's just a legal loophole to get a faster firing weapon. I believe those should be illegal as well. And I know that gun control laws do not prevent tragedies like this.
Yeah.
Criminals gun a criminal, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I just think that in the interest of public safety, that we should put up as many roadblocks as possible.
Also trigger cranks, which was another thing that was originally thought that he might have, which I wasn't all that familiar with. I knew they existed, but I didn't know exactly what they did or how easy they were to get. There's a lot of discussion about this out there, and I think the argument against the bump stock or the trigger crank is a good one. I don't think there is any legitimate reason other than making a cool YouTube video, which I think public health and safety comes a little bit above your ability to make cool YouTube videos or impress your friends with how many rounds you're able to put down range. In this case, it shows why something like that should be illegal. We had a conversation, myself and our own Jonathan Kopanger, who many people who've listened to this show be familiar with as one of our reporters who typically focuses on the VA and other items. He is not a fan of firearms, whereas I am. I enjoy going down to the range, firing off some rounds with my weapons. I like having the ability to protect myself, my home, and my family, most importantly, with firearms. I'm well trained with them. Again, I was in the military for a year. I had to carry two of them with me everywhere I went, my rifle and my sidearm. And this is something that it was a part of my life for a long time, and it still is. And I think that when we look at things like this, having the idea that you have of the bump stocks and the trigger guards being illegal, I think those are good steps. I think that's something that, a little too late for those people in Las Vegas who lost their lives, but there's no reason for something like that to be on the market.
Right. And it's just, like I said, I'd rather someone have to go through the black market and risk getting nabbed by the FBI or ATF than be able to go to a store and buy one.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's all about creating as many legal roadblocks as possible.
Yeah. And would it have helped in this situation? Maybe, maybe not, because we don't know enough about this guy yet. We still don't know what his motive was.
Right.
I mean, you've heard 50 different things from a religious conversion recently to he's far right, he's far left, he's this, he's that. Nobody knows. Nobody's put anything out there. I mean, unless you go to like InfoWars or something like that.
Oh, Lord.
They seem to think that they know exactly what he was.
They always know, especially when they turn the frogs gay.
What?
That's a big thing. Yeah. Well, Alex Jones once made this whole thing where, you know, the government was turning frogs gay.
He's a little out there, I think. Maybe a bit of an understatement when we talk about him. Oh, poor Alex. Have you ever seen the picture of him as a young man?
No.
Oh, I got it on my computer out there. I found that. I was shocked. He was a handsome devil. I don't know what happened. But anyway, there is a podcast now up at connectingvets.com. You can go to the podcast tab called Deal With It. What the hell can we do to stop mass shootings? And the argument between myself and Jonathan, it's an interesting one and a respectful one. It's not the two of us screaming at each other, because in general, I hope we like each other enough. I think he's an all right guy. Hopefully the feeling's mutual. If it's not, well, I don't care. Anyway, he basically would like to...
Very mature.
He's not a fan of guns, doesn't want them anywhere near him, and I understand that, and I respect that. He made the argument that without guns, yesterday wouldn't have happened, or 2 days ago wouldn't have happened, I guess, technically. My argument to that is, how do you know that? Crazy people have found a way to kill lots of people forever. Yeah. Since people have been around, there have been mass murderers, there have been mass killings. I mean, things like this have happened. The most deadly school attack in our history was at Bath Township, where not a single gunshot was fired. Explosives were used.
Someone said that to me on Facebook. It said, how many people would have died if he had only had a knife? I said, well, how many people would have died if you drove a semi-truck at full speed through that crowd?
Or put explosives there. I mean, you know, we've seen suicide car bomb attacks in Iraq, specifically in Afghanistan, that have taken out hundreds of people at once. I mean, this is a horrifying event. And again, we're not looking to diminish that or dismiss it, but some of the simplistic arguments I see, and then the other one, I just need to talk about this briefly. The next person I see talking or hear talking about silencers.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, stop it. First off, they're called suppressors. They're not silencers. There's no such thing as a gun silencer that makes it like in, you know, James Bond. Pew, pew. Where that's the sound that you hear, doesn't exist. It cuts down on the decibels a percentage, some of them more than others, depending on the type of suppressor, the type of weapon. But this Hollywood idea that people have of a silencer making a gun sound like just tink, tink, that's the sound of the... No, it's not. It's not.
To put it in perspective, there are shotgun suppressors.
Yeah.
Do you really think a shotgun is going to be silenced?
No. And you remember the movie No Country for Old Men?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah,
based down in your home state of Texas, where Anton Chigurh uses a suppressor on a shotgun that makes it almost totally silent, which is nonsense.
Yeah.
As a shotgun owner, they're quite loud, and there's nothing you can do to stop that sound. You can cut it a little bit, but you know, the debate on firearms, I think you have people who know what they're talking about and are against firearms, but they seem to be few and far between, it seems. Like I got into it on Twitter a year or so ago with a senator from the state of New York, where I was living at the time, where she put out some tweets on silencers and talking about how, you know, it would allow murderers to crawl through our neighborhood silently killing people. And I was like, that's not how it works. You got to do the research, man. If you have an argument, that's fine. And there are a lot of people who have good arguments. And the argument for suppressors, actually, in a lot of places in Europe, they're required for you to go to a shooting range as a form of hearing protection. And basically as a common courtesy to your fellow range shooters. It's, when you see people who are in elected office who haven't bothered to do the research, or the other possibility that they are intentionally misleading people to make them think this, you wonder which one it is. And I think of any tweet I've ever made, that one got the most retweets and likes. Like, it was thousands. And that's when I turned off notifications on Twitter, because up to that point, I don't think I'd had more than like 40, 50 likes on anything I did. Thousands came in on that tweet, and every 2 seconds my phone was just bing, 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 bing. I had to turn off notifications, never turned them back on. But I think an interesting conversation between myself and Jonathan, where the two of us certainly agree on one thing, Jake, and that is, when you look at all of these mass killings, the one common denominator, it's not guns, it's not explosives, it's not vehicles, it's not knives, it's mental illness.
Yep.
And whether that is someone who is a religious extremist who takes the step to try and kill as many people as they want, whether that's someone with no affiliation to any group, whether it's someone with an affiliate, it doesn't matter. Each and every one of these people, there's something misfiring in their head that allows them to do that. Again, the common denominator in my eyes is not the tool used, it's the people. And that's where I think we need to focus most to address it, because a lot of people think it's very easy to get guns in this country. It's not as easy as some people think. You
know? There was a story where some reporter in New York tried to do an expose on how easy it is to get a quote-unquote assault rifle, which, if you know, is a stupid term.
Assault weapon.
Yeah, assault weapon.
Assault rifle is an actual, it's a meaningful term. Assault weapon is a legal definition based on like bayonet lugs and stuff.
Yeah, well, whatever. He tried to prove how easy it is to get a hold of one, and then he was denied. Because he failed his background check.
Right. And then there was, of course, Mark Kelly, who is he's a Navy veteran, astronaut, husband of Gabrielle Giffords, the congressman who was shot by that madman Jared Loughner in Arizona, congresswoman, I should say, who tried to go and show how easy it was to buy a rifle and, again, was unable to. He said, I'm going to be able to walk into this store and walk right out with her, and that's not how it happened. There are checks in place, and when you start doing the research, you start realizing, I don't know what else there is legally that we can do about this as far as guns go, but there's got to be something we can do as far as the people pulling the triggers. Because, as has been said many times, you put a gun down on the floor, it ain't killing anybody. Put a gun in the hands of a responsible, rational, sane person, it's probably not killing anybody. Put it in the hands of a madman, you get things like Arizona, Las Vegas, Newtown, and so on. Morning Briefing, National Commander of the American Legion, after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Welcome back to the Morning Briefing. Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. It's been a fantastic show already, and it's just getting better from here. Again, our thanks to Denise Rohan, National Commander of the American Legion. What a story. Can you imagine showing up and saying, hey, I'm eligible for membership in your organization? And then that organization's representative saying, no, not you. We wanted to talk to your husband. Yeah, but I'm eligible. Meh, we wanted to talk to your husband. I think a lot of people would have turned and never looked back at an organization who had someone who would behave in that way. But you know what? Different time, different era. And Denise Rohan, not the type to turn her back on something just because they shut her down. She ended up still finding a way to get involved at a different post and rising to the first female state commander. And now the first female national commander. They're heading into their 100th year. 99 commanders, and this is the first female, which, as she said, as far as the ratio, as far as the numbers, it kind of makes sense that there might only be one out of 100 up to this point. But with her year and her plan of family first, to think that the Legion's going to be doing some pretty good things and going to be pretty happy that they elected their first ever female national commander. And our thanks to her for coming in. And if you're listening to this in podcast form, well, you're going to have to download the separate one with the national commander of the Legion. A great story there. There's another great story. A great story involving spirits. Yeah, you know what those are, right? The booze, the alcohol, it's something that quite a few people enjoy, but there aren't that many veterans involved in that industry, in part because of the big behemoth companies, your Diageos and all the rest of them that kind of have the market cornered. Well, kind of have it cornered isn't having it totally cornered. And that is where America Bourbon comes in. And joining us now is Derek Sisson, the CEO of America Bourbon. Derek, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, as I understand it, before you got into the bourbon biz, you were serving the United States in the military. Tell us just a little bit about your service, where you're from, when you joined, and what you did while you were in.
Yes, I'm from Houston, Texas. I served in the United States Marine Corps. I was in through 85 through 1990. I served in 2nd Force Reconnaissance Company. And I also served with 2nd Anglico, the Air and Naval Gunfire Liaison Company.
Now, when you got out, if you can think back to that time, what do you remember about that transition period for you, going from Derek the Marine to Derek the civilian? What was that like?
I think that probably the hardest part of my transition was in the Marine Corps. You have that esprit de corps. And, you know, when you head into the civilian world or you enter the civilian workplace, I think probably one of the hardest transitions for me was you really don't have that camaraderie. You know, the loyalty doesn't exist, so to speak. And, society, you know, everybody's obviously out, you know, trying to take care of their own families and so right. forth, where in the Corps, you know, and certainly working with, you know, the reconnaissance community and a small four-man team, you're certainly looking out for everybody's, make sure everybody's okay, even from, you know, the head down to the feet, making sure they have, you know, dry socks and, and what have you. I mean, to every single detail. And so, I mean, that was probably the most difficult transition for me, just understanding, wow, this is a completely different mindset out here than it is in the small teams of the reconnaissance, you know, team in the Marine Corps.
And how did you adjust to that? How did you get over that being an issue for you once you did realize that difference?
That took a little time. I mean, it's just like, you know, we're taught. I mean, you just have to overcome and adjust a bit and adapt to your surroundings. And basically, that's what I did. You know, I moved to Puerto Rico after I got out. I eventually started my own tour company. Doing, you know, diving and kayaking and what have you, because that was something I was trained at, and that was something I understood that I could make a living with in the civilian world. And I had an entrepreneurial spirit. I really wasn't one who was ever really cut out to be punching a clock. And so that was really kind of the start to my entrepreneurial journey in the civilian world.
And that entrepreneurial journey has brought our guest, Derek Sisson, from leaving the United States Marine Corps, having to adapt to that civilian life, as he just said, working, teaching, diving, kayaking, all that sorts of stuff. And now you have entered the world of spirits. How did you come to be associated with America Bourbon?
Well, like most things in life, a lot of it's fate, and sometimes we just kind of fall into things that we, you know, we find a passion for, and it just becomes a natural evolution. When I got back from Puerto Rico, I basically entered the corporate world, I guess you could say, and I was working for a large sourcing company and helping people get product sourced all the way from fitness equipment to rehabilitation equipment. And along, you know, I've always enjoyed wine and fine wines, and I made some connections over in Italy, and they said, hey, could you possibly help us find some distributors in the United States to help us, you know, distribute this wine? And I said, well, I can try. I don't have any experience there, but let me give it my best shot. And through that, I met some distributors. I was doing it for free. And then I said, you know what, why not get my importer's license and start trying to make some money out of this on the side. And so I did that. I got my importer's license and represented 3, 4, 5 Italian wineries, started making some connections there. That evolved into myself saying, well, why not become a distributor myself? So I went ahead and got my distribution license and started a company called Texas Top Shelf, and started learning about the world of whiskey and fine spirits and visiting distilleries and learning more about what customers like, and you know, the functionality of the bottles and labeling and everything that goes with the marketing and packaging of a spirits product. And that evolved to where I am now, is finally owning my own spirit and do trial and error.
You know, it's interesting that you mention that, because we hear from a lot of veterans who've kind of had that entrepreneurial spirit that you talked about, who didn't have any or much experience in the industry that they ended up going into, but it seems that many of them are able to succeed despite not having that success heading into it. Do you think there's something that veterans have in common that makes them more likely to succeed in situations like that?
I think so. I think that, you know, we're really, like I said earlier, we're really taught to overcome and adapt in any situation. And I think it's no different than in the civilian world. I mean, once you figure out your surroundings and figure out what you want, and you and make a mission for yourself, so to speak, I think any goal is possible of achieving.
And that is an important thing for people to remember, I think, when they have that struggle when they get out, whether they are an entrepreneur like yourself, someone who has that great idea, or just someone looking for the right team to join. Of course, you've started your own team at America Bourbon, and you guys have actually joined up, I know, with one of the biggest companies in the veteran world, that being Grunt Style. So how did you come to be kind of partnered with them in this venture?
Yeah, that goes back to when I was a distributor. I was working as a distributor. For some reason, well, obviously, I became the go-to guy for veteran-owned products in Texas. So a lot of people, a lot of the vets in our industry, when they were looking for somebody to help them distribute, somebody they could count on, they came to me. And doing that with one of the products, I found out, you know, the power of the veteran community in that world. You know, they were loyal customers, and I also recognized what price point I needed to be at. And I was working with a smaller veteran group, but then I did a little research and said, well, I wonder what it'd be like if I teamed up with the number one veteran, post 9/11 veteran-owned business. So I had a mutual friend who was also a vetrepreneur who had a media company in San Antonio, another former Marine, and he actually made the introduction between myself and Dan Alaric, and we hit it off, and through a couple of months of negotiation, we came up with a contract between ourselves. And then we worked about another 6-7 months on the flavor profile of the bourbon itself. And about 2.5 months ago, we launched at the Texas Package Store Association, and just been moving pretty quickly ever since.
We're speaking with Derek Sisson. Derek is a former Marine who is currently the CEO of Merica Bourbon, a new bourbon brand, veteran-owned and operated. Now, how important is networking? That's another thing. Now that you've gotten to that CEO level and you've seen it on your rise, I think a lot of veterans hear about college networks, the alumni network. Do you think that the military alumni or veteran network is similar and as important as something like that college alumni network?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and just through my experience, I think it's critical. I think it's critical that veterans align themselves with other veterans, reconnect. When I got out, there wasn't that unity in my era that they have now. So we were just kind of, you know, once you get EAS, you were out there, right? You were just out there to fend for yourselves. And, you know, it wasn't until recently where the younger Marines and younger, you know, vets were like, hey, Derek, why don't you come to this event? Hey, Derek, why don't you come to that event? And I reconnected, and I ended up, you know, understanding that, you know what, I can be a mentor to some of these younger guys getting out, transitioning. And going back to what you said, I think it's incredibly important, and certainly in the spirits industry, because so much of it is networking through, you know, looking for distributors and looking for sourcing for bottles or labels or what distillery, you know, to use and what have you, if you're going to do a co-packing arrangement. So yeah, I think it's crucial.
Do you think you would have been able to do what you've done thus far with Merica without that veteran network?
Absolutely not.
And what is it exactly that you think is because I know as someone who's now working in the spirits industry, you're going up against some major worldwide corporations. You can look at Diageo and all the various others who are out there who have separate brands. A lot of people don't realize that maybe their favorite vodka, their favorite whiskey comes from the same company that their second favorite brand comes from as well. So
That's right.
Hard is it to build that sort of ability to be able to kind of challenge those companies that already have such a presence?
Well, like I said, when I was on the distribution side, when representing another veteran-owned brand or two or three veteran-owned brands, I realized the power of social media. I realized the power of connecting veterans through social media and just really, you know, patriotic Americans, you know. And I think, you know, for the big boys, obviously they can spend hundreds of millions of dollars on outdoor advertising and in-store tastings and incentive programs and all kinds of, you know, promos that we can't afford to do at this stage of the game. But we do have the power of the community. We have the power of social media behind us and the power of a very, very loyal customer base to veterans and patriots.
Let's talk just for a second about the naming of Merica Bourbon, because that word Merica has different connotations to it depending on who you're talking to, where some people see it as indicative of the dumbing down of America, some people trying to reclaim that to be like, Merica, yeah, and put it out there as their name. So what was behind the decision to go with that very interesting name for your bourbon?
Well, you know, being a good old Texas boy, I was born and raised at in the state of Texas. And, you know, we've been leaving off the A for quite a while. And, you know, being a Marine, being a former Marine, I thought that's how it was actually spelled, you know. So, you know, for us, it was certainly a matter of pride, like you said, you know, America, you know, and it's America, you know, come from Texas. And then Daniel always jokes, like I said, you know, I that's how I really thought it was spelled. So, yeah, that's basically it. I'm joking about the spelling point, of course, but yeah, but it's just a sense of pride, really. And, you know, because of labeling restrictions, you can't actually call it America. So we had to call it America.
Ah, okay. And of course, there are many Marines, Derek, who are fantastic spellers. My 13 years in the Navy, I even met a few who knew the entire alphabet front to back. So it happens.
but they weren't grunts. You know, they had the S1 and what have you.
We're speaking with Derek Sisson, former Marine and current CEO of America Bourbon, a new bourbon that has just emerged on the scene, and it's veteran-owned. So what has the response been like in the limited time that your bourbon has been out there and available? What has the response been like, first from the veteran community, and second from the drinking community in general, I guess?
Yeah, the veteran community, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. We are getting inundated with requests from all over the country. So we're just trying to catch up as far as distribution, you know, nationally, you know, state by state. The next state we're going into is Illinois, which is the home of Grunt Style. So that would be the obvious next, you know, step for us, coming out of Texas. My base is Texas, Daniel's base is Illinois, and then we're expanding from there, looking for online presence, online platform that we can sell online. And we just entered our first competition, as far as whiskeys go, and we took silver in the Whiskeys of the World competition, which is a very prestigious award. So everybody who tries it is just blown away with the quality. We wanted to have a really good quality bourbon. It was my mission to have a great quality bourbon at a very fair price. I wanted your E3s and your E2s and E1s to be able to go into a PX or any liquor store and be able to purchase this brand when a lot of our competitors are in that $60-$65 dollar price point, MSRP on the shelf. We're $27.99 to $29.99. So we're offering award-winning vodka at a very value price that everybody can enjoy, and that was part of my mission.
And part of that mission is being the CEO of America Bourbon. And, you know, Derek, there are a lot of veterans out there who think they have a good business idea, maybe don't have the business knowledge, just like when you first started out in the spirits mm-hmm. industry. If someone is looking to take that first step into whatever business it is, whether it's spirits or something else, now that you've seen some success, now that you know a lot of things, what kind of information would you pass on for them as far as how they can get started down the right path?
I would say the first thing you have to do is take that step. You have to be strong enough, and it's scary. It's certainly scary when you're transitioning. If you don't have anything to fall back on. But the first thing you have to do is take that step. The second thing is reconnect with people within your community, reconnect within the veteran community. Seek mentorship. Try to find some folks that have been doing that particular business for a long time, and find people that have been successful in that particular business for a long time. I found out there's a lot of older folks that, you know, have a wealth of information, and they're more than willing to share that information with a young transitioning veteran.
And those veterans going out there and taking that first step, I mean, the intimidation factor, the fear factor is something that we've seen repeatedly, and people have to overcome that. When it comes to overcoming it, is it just, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off and dealing with it, or is it something that they can work up to and kind of try to start smaller and then grow from there?
I think work smaller and work up, just like I started as a wine importer. There was not nearly the risk as going all in and becoming a distributor where you're purchasing a warehouse and an enormous amount of licensing and compliance each month. I think starting out small like that, learning the industry step by step, would probably be the best way to go about it, in my personal opinion.
Now, you are the CEO of America Bourbon. I imagine there's probably a few other people working on the product with you. Have you made an effort to bring veterans onto your team, and are there plans to do more of that in the future?
Absolutely. As we grow, obviously, you're familiar with Grunstall, and Grunstall hires quite a few veterans. As this brand grows, we're looking to open a distillery here in Texas as soon as we can, and within that distillery, we're going to be looking to hire veterans, and we're also looking to give back to the veteran community, not just through charitable donations, but through mentorship.
And that mentorship is so important, and it's something that we've seen. Of course, the company that you're partnered with, Grunstall, Black Rifle Coffee Company, all these other veteran-owned organizations that have seen some success have also been open to helping their fellow veterans, even if they have an idea that is perhaps going to be competition for them someday. How open are you to being able to mentor someone, and how important is it to you to be available to your fellow vets in that manner?
Yeah, that's one of the keys for me. I certainly definitely am available, and I will mentor any young man any chance I get. I know that it's happened with me, even within my own family. My uncle, ex-former Marine, has been a mentor to me through this business transition. My father passed away, another former Marine who was a mentor while I was starting this business. So, you know, not just, you know, veterans, you know, outside the family, but, you know, seek out, you know, older veterans that are within your family, because they want to help as well. So, yeah, I mean, I would absolutely be available to any young service person getting out during his transitional period.
You know, there seem to be a few things that successful veteran businesses have in common, from what I've noticed in doing this show and talking to so many veteran-owned business owners and CEOs and COOs and all those people. It's not only the ability and the desire to work hard to get to that level, but also the openness to help out their fellow veterans and not looking at them as competition, even if they're in the same industry, but looking at them as, you know, someone who's coming up to do the same thing and maybe giving them a better handle on that. It's certainly sounds like Derek Sisson, CEO of America Bourbon, is going to be interested in that. Now, as you mentioned, you guys available in Texas, working on Illinois now. If people are interested in finding out more about America Bourbon, keeping track of exactly what you guys are doing, where should they go to do that, Derek?
They can go to americabourbon.com, or they can check out the America Bourbon on Facebook, or Grunstall.com or Grunstall on any of their social media platforms.
Now, if there were one message that you could give to people about America Bourbon, what it stands for, what it means, what would that be?
It would be pride in country. Bourbon is the only true American spirit, so that's why we wanted to do a bourbon. So a true American spirit, pride in country, a value at a very good quality,
you know,
award-winning quality, I should say.
Yeah, there you go. You guys, as you said, just received a silver medal in your first contest that you entered. And, you know, Derek, as we look around at the current landscape in this country, you know, protests at football games, protests out on the streets, people arguing back and forth on both sides. How important is it, do you think, for people to be able to look at the nation as someone who is a veteran, someone who's now a business owner, someone who's putting forth a product that you've kind of draped in that sort of patriotism? How do you hope that things like this may have an effect on the national discourse, if at all?
You know, I mean, I think sitting at a bar, enjoying it with friends at home, or a game, enjoying a good bourbon together, sometimes is the equalizer that can open up dialogue. And, you know, we're very neutral as far as our customer base. You know, it's hopefully it will bring people closer together and create some dialogue, and have us actually have when people speak, it seems to actually work a little more effectively than screaming and shouting at each other. So we're hoping America Bourbon can open those doors possibly.
It would be fantastic if that does happen. And America Bourbon, of course, as we've been speaking with the CEO, Derek Sisson, making waves already, even though it's only been out there for a short time. And again, that website, if people want to check out more info on America Bourbon, Derek?
www.americabourbon.com.
And we want to thank Derek and all of our guests today for joining us on the show, including Denise Rohan, first ever female state commander of an American Legion state, and now the first ever national female commander of the American Legion. Really fantastic having her in studio today. Also a big thanks to super producer Jake Hughes. Me talk good. It's why me do job like this. And, of course, for that discussion on the gun control debate, you'll be able to see more of that at ConnectingVets.com, particularly a discussion moderated by one Philbert Briggs and with myself and Jonathan Kopanger talking about, our thoughts on that. We have different thoughts because, listen, we're both veterans, but veterans are not a monolith. It's one of those recurring themes. We don't all think the same way. We don't all feel the same way. However, the majority of us respect each other enough to respect each other's opinions, whether we disagree or not. Hopefully you agree that this is a good program, and if so, I hope you tune in every day live, 7 o'clock to 8:30 Eastern Time and Pacific Time at ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day. I've been your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a good day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.